When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello everyone, my name is Rebecca Kelly and you're listening to the Everywhere We Go podcast. On this week's episode, I sit down with Alison Murphy. Alison has the most infectious laugh, but behind this laugh lies tragedy. While dancing away to the last song on a night out, Alison's sister Lisa fell to the floor and unfortunately passed away. Alison tells me of her dysfunctional upbringing that led to not only the breakup between husband and wife, but to the broken relationships that will never be mended. She tells me the effect of finding her father's secret children and the impact it has had on her own relationships. She tells me she would be lost without family and friends and how her mother is her biggest support. Alison is a tonic, a warm hug, and as her friends tell me, never whines or complains and just gets on with it. She's been through so much and still can laugh, and what a laugh it is. Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where do you come from?
I'm Alison and I'm from Airfield.
Hey Alison.
Hi Rebecca.
Nervous?
Not a bit. Yes.
So we have a mutual friend in common and she reached out to me and I reached out to you. So she told me a little bit about you, but not too much.
Okay.
So where do you want to start?
It depends on what you know.
So she said about your mum and dad, and was there a separation there?
Yeah, my mum and dad are separated since I was 9 months.
Okay, God.
Yeah, I'm the youngest of four. And my mum had the four of us then by herself and she was under 30 and they split up. So they had, I suppose in hindsight, it was a bit of a strange setup because my dad came to visit us every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And they never said they were split up. And in the 90s, nobody was really split up. So my mum trying to protect us never said that they were split up. And we didn't question it. We didn't, we rolled with it. Saw him every weekend, as I said. Wouldn't have known him very well, but was really familiar with him, was in touch with his side of the family. That was just the way it was for us, you know? So.
What was that like? Like, so he came and did they play like Happy Families on the weekend?
I mean, yeah, like my dad would have dinner the odd time and, you know, looking back on it now as an adult, I think probably it was kind of awkward. It wasn't a very natural, you know, relationship between them. But we didn't know that at the time. So, well, certainly I didn't. I mean, my eldest sister would have been more aware, but I didn't. And I didn't question it either. I just thought that's the way it was. And my mom told, I mean, you think of the things you believe as a child. My mom told us that he lived in his mother's and my nanny's because it was closer to work. And we live in Airfield and my nanny lives in Harmonstown and he works in town. So it's not like he's doing this long commute, you know, but like that Airfield to Harmonstown is a long trot as a kid. So I really never copped anything. It was odd. I obviously knew he didn't live there, but didn't think they were separated. And divorce wasn't a thing when we were growing up. It wasn't legal. Nobody's parents were divorced. So we just went with that. They were still together, but he just didn't live there. He came on Christmas Eve and stayed there every year, which was great because we had him every Christmas morning. And I used to really look forward to that. I must say that any of this that I'm saying is just me, how I felt, because we were in different stages, all of us, there was four of us. So this is just how I felt, you know, as a kid. I'm sure my brother and sister would agree that we did look forward to it. And then that kind of fizzled out as we got older. But they were good memories, you know, from my childhood, really was good memories. There was nothing odd about it. And I think even though in the end, when we go along in the story, it came back with a bang, it was the right thing to do at the time because it was protecting us from, you know, people saying things or feeling different. It was always just us and my mum, and we just never questioned it.
And what kind of mammy was she?
Oh, my mum is an absolute legend. There's never a bother on her. She's really strong. She keeps the family together. And, you know, she's really funny in her own way. But because I'm way too old, I'm back at home now, and I'm way too old to be living with her. So we're like a divorced couple, but can't afford to move out. So we have these really petty rows. And she had a row with me one night, and we were just niggling at each other. And, you know, she got my underwear off the radiator, and she said, "Here, take your big knickers with you. They're keeping the heat in." And when I caught them, they actually were quite big. So I just laughed and went to bed, you know. But she's great, my mom. She's been through a lot, and she's old school, and she's from a different, I mean, her parents are from the country, and they were kind of cold. So my mom doesn't have, you know, she wouldn't be an open talker. She wouldn't tell you when something's wrong, which in the result, she's kind of passive aggressive when something is wrong as well. So we're really the opposite that way, but she's great. She's my best support.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, always. It's probably a bit different because when her parents moved to Dublin, my mum was born here, but they left their eldest daughter behind with their parents in Wexford. And I'm not sure, we don't get a lot of detail about the family history, but they were, I suppose, an odd makeup, really an odd upbringing. But I think that's the way it was for a lot of grandparents, especially women. They had to have the children where how they felt was irrelevant.
Mm.
And, you know, my nana buried two children, so my mum lost a sister and a brother. And I think that probably made my nana even more standoffish. So things were odd that way.
So then move it on a little bit for me. Tell me then, when do you realise your mum and dad are not together?
I was in secondary, and I felt really foolish then, you know, for kind of believing in it. And, you know, like I say, it wasn't a big thing. And everybody, we've always lived on the same road, still there. And everybody just knew my mom was there herself. So it was just never a thing. You know, there was no big reaction to other people. I just realized when I was in secondary, as I say, that they definitely were separated. They definitely weren't living together, you know, so.
And then did you have that conversation with her?
No.
No?
No. We just accepted everything as it was. I mean, even if we would talk amongst ourselves, my brother's closest in age to me. You know, we might say things, "Did you know? Did you, you know?" But we never would talk to my mum. It wasn't, when we were younger, we couldn't talk really openly because it just, the relationship was just different. We just believed what my mum said, and you wouldn't really be questioning her. None of us did until we got older and we started talking amongst ourselves. But no, I never said it to her that I never realised.
Is he still in your life?
Not anymore. Not anymore. He was in lots of different ways for a long time. But I think the last time I saw my dad was when they were getting divorced in court. And I mean, they were separated. Like, I'm 37, I was 34 at the time. So they were separated like 33 years. But like I say, they'd never any need to. It was amicable. They had an understanding, you know, and they got on well enough. But things had fallen really apart by this time between my dad and everybody in the family, really.
In what way?
He was really good. Like, when my eldest sister passed away, everything was just kind of at the weekends and, you know, your birthdays and whatever. And then when my eldest sister passed away, he was really good and he was great support to my mom. But he had another partner, so obviously he had obligations himself. And then he got a certain amount of close to each of us, and then there was a bit of backstabbing and stuff, and, you know, just first one sister, then my brother, and then one by one everybody fell away. And he deserved it, really. He wasn't nice to everybody, you know, and he did things that were very hurtful to people. And then in the end, it was just me talking to my dad. But I was really aware at that point that that couldn't continue, because my loyalties will always be with my brothers and sisters and my mom. And I didn't know, because I kept, you know, kind of defending him, going, "But he's my dad. He's the only dad I'll ever have." But now, in hindsight, I kind of think I wanted something that never was. it was only the only reason, well, I wouldn't say the only reason because I don't know, but he was coming to visit me in my house and he was kind of saying things, and he was going, he actually wanted to divorce my mom at that point because he wanted the house sold. But my mom was living in it, you know, and I said, where do you expect her to go? And he, oh, that's my, I have my house, this, that, that. And I said, look, you know, this can't go on, you know. So in the end, he'd come to the house. I was only living around the corner from my mom and I had the two kids there. And he came to the house and I forget now what he actually said, but my mom ended up ringing him and she said, do not be passing messages through Alison. If you want to say anything to me or you want to get to me at all, you know where I am. And that was it. And we didn't see him then till court.
Can I ask them, did he have another family?
He had another family that we didn't know about. So this all came out after my sister passed away. So what happened was my sister passed away and we would have been, my sister and I, very kind of spirit into the spiritual and mediums and everything like this. And I went to this brilliant medium. I think maybe my sister was, it was within the year anyway, it was fairly raw. And she told me all about my sister and this and that. And she said, oh, and you have a brother. And I said, I do, yeah. And she said, no, a brother in spirit. And I said, no, that's not me. And she said, you do, it's a baby. You need to ask your mom to ask your dad. So I was thinking, hardly. Went home and asked my mom. And my mom just said, you need to ask your dad. So I didn't. Again, I was just too afraid. So I said it to my sister.
How old
were you? 21.
Okay.
21. And I went to my sister Emma, and she actually said it to my dad, and he said, well, yeah, I did have a baby. He was stillborn though. And that was a couple of years ago. So she said to him, you don't have any other children that we should know about. And he said, actually I do. And she was 3 at the time. So I was 21 and I thought I was the youngest and she was 3. So we just didn't know what to do from there, you know. But at the, like I say, at the time we were seeing him a lot and it seemed like nobody, I suppose nobody ever really said it to him at that point. Like we all just forgive him. You know, people make mistakes. We understand the situation you were in. And, you know, in hindsight, it just was so stressful. But when I had Isabel about a year later, and we had known about the little girl. I won't say her name because it wouldn't be fair to her. Even though she's like, what is she now? 20 odd. So anyway, I had Isabel and we were still, I had Isabel pretty close after Lisa passed away. And we were still going through the process. There was a court case going on for Lisa's daughter. And then Isabel's christening and my dad brought the little girl with them. Obviously never said he was going to bring her or anything. So we were just like flabbergasted, just dumbstruck that he would. I mean, there was nothing against her, but just the way he went about everything was really, really wrong, you know. So that's how we were introduced, and then it all fell apart. We kept up a relationship even with her. Now she was a kid, so she would come over, he would bring her over to my mom's house, and my mom was really accepting of it. She never minded because she said it's not the child's fault and this and that and the other. But then when all the relationships broke down with me and my family and my dad, I was sad for her because she's an only child. So we still all had each other, but she had been introduced to brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, cousins, and then taken away again. So it was a fallout.
And was the fallout over the house?
Yeah. And ultimately it was over the house. I mean, there was lots of different things that went on. You know, it's the way he was about everything. It's how he went about everything. Like I would like to think we were good enough to kind of, I suppose, accept that he'd made mistakes and the hurt had done. But it was just like he kept doing it. He kept doing things to hurt us, or that did hurt us, and he just didn't care that it did.
Like what?
He was, for example, let's say he was in a band with my brother and he wanted to kick my brother out of the band. But he rang somebody else who, you know, to tell them this. And there was a 3-way conversation that my brother heard. So, you know, that's his only son. You know, it was just the way he did things. He just hurt people over and over. And it was just, he will never change is the thing. He will never change. So it is no good for me to have a relationship with him anymore. It's not worth it to me. And I think even though, yes, he is my dad and he has always been and will always be, my other family have been there for me so much more, and we've been there for one another. He's not really part of that. And like that, we would never, we'd never do that to one another, to hurt each other. And we would never do it to him either, to anybody, because my mom didn't raise us that way. So it's just, at this point, I often think about it, because I still see like his sisters and brothers, you know, if I'm out for a pint or wherever, they'd be there. And it's difficult, because they were in a difficult situation as well. And it wasn't their place to ever tell us any of that. But there won't be a relationship there from me, and certainly not from my brother and my sister. Again, we've tried, we've definitely tried. And I think, like I said, forgiving him when it shouldn't have been our job to, he's the parent. Mm. So it shouldn't have been our job to have to do that on top of everything we were going through already. So.
And that's something that Paul said in his podcast. Paul fell out. Paul just cut his dad completely out of his life. Mm. But his brother was still invested until the father finally let the brother down and the brother could see the true colours.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. And my brother and my sister even said to me, when they had stopped speaking to him, look, if you want to keep speaking to him, it's your choice. But they were worried. They were like, he's going to hurt you and he's going to let you down. So.
And then you said there about everything you've been through. So do you want to tell me about Lisa?
Lisa's my eldest sister. There's 2 years between all of us. So there's two between my brother, and then there's four between me and Emma. And then there's six between Lisa and I. And we were out one Saturday night. It was January, and it was Emma's birthday was going to be the Monday. So we were out the Saturday night for Emma's birthday in a nightclub in Swords. And we were having a great night. And we all had boyfriends at the time. And my cousin was there as well with her now husband. And we were, you know, having a great night, and it was coming towards the end of the night, and they said it was last dance. And I said, come on, we have one last dance. And up we went anyway, dancing. And it was really, really hot. It was really small. The Harp in Swords, I don't know if you've ever been in it, but upstairs, and it was really boxy. But anyway, I was dancing away, and I felt my sister tip my shoulder. And as I turned, she leaned on me, and I brushed her hair out of her face. I thought, what's wrong? So I tried to grab her, but she just fell to the ground kind of slowly because she was a bit heavy. And now the staff in it were great. They were over within seconds. And down they, you know, they lifted her up, brought her down the stairs. And I went with her, and they laid her out, and they were, you know, pacing up and down and looking. And I was saying, someone do something, you know. And they were saying, did she take anything? And I said, no, my sister never took a drug in her life. And we didn't even drink that much. And they called one of the other barman over who had training in CPR, and he kept giving it to her until the fire brigade came. And I felt like it was going on for hours, and I was, because I was 20 at the time, and I was standing there, and I'd forgotten even that everybody else was still inside, they were with us. So then the fire brigade came, and they used the defibrillator and stuff, and I was thinking, what's after happening? So they put her into the ambulance. My sister went in the ambulance with her, and we all followed on in a taxi straight into the family room. And you know, I knew going into that room that this was, that something was wrong, that something was really, really wrong. And we were there for, like I say, it feels like forever. And they have a liaison officer coming in and out with you and everything, and can I get you anything? And no, what's the update? So the doctor came in, and they said that machine is working for her heart, it's not beating. And I said, why not? You know, and you know, you ask really stupid questions when you're caught off like that. And they said, we don't know. We're running blood tests to see what's happened. So that was grand. And about an hour after that, maybe, or could have been more, the doctor came back in, she closed the door behind her. And I said, she's dead, isn't she? And she said, yeah. And I just knew it. I just knew before she even said it. And then my sister said, are you joking? And she said, no. She said that there wasn't anything we could do. Her heart wasn't beating by the time she got here. So, like I said, we were all there, and then somebody had rang my mum in the meantime, and we were sitting there, you know, just real kind of numb, and the window was to the left of us, and we heard the taxi pull up, and my sister's boyfriend at the time went out, and so did my sister who'd passed away. Her boyfriend went out with Emma, with my other sister, and I heard my mum, no, 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 you know, and I just thought, can't be real, can't be happening. So my mum came in. She was devastated. And then I don't know how or who, but my dad did turn up And I'll never forget his face. He was just completely shocked. He just, his face was just looking at my mum, because I don't know when the last time Lisa would have seen him would have been, or what he'd have even been thinking at the time. And then my brother came in and we were there for a while. And then they said, you know, do you want to see her? And there was a door beside us that we didn't, I hadn't even realized was there. So they brought us into the door and there she was. And it was just like, everything changed. It was so surreal, because even though you're looking at them, you know it's not them. It's like, what, where have you gone? You know, where are you? And that was that. And then Emma's, you know, I feel really bad for Emma. She's my other sister. And it's her birthday 2 days later. And it will always be your days, her birthday 2 days later, you know. But that was like the start of it. Up to that, everything had been pretty normal.
Did you get answers?
There was nothing anatomically wrong, but they suspected it was cardiac arrhythmia. So that's like, it's to do with the electrodes in the heart. It's a difference in your heartbeat. And they said they think it was that, but there's nothing to say that. So that was, you know, kind of felt a bit fobbed off by that at the time. But I have to say, since that, they put you in touch with these counsellors and heart people and everything. So then we went under the care of CRY, the Call for Cardiac Risk in the Young, and they deal with families who've had sudden deaths like Lisa's. And they've been great. They screen you all the time, every year, make sure you're doing well. And then there's all counselling and everything with them. So they've been fantastic. But they never really, like, without the definitive answer, the only thing I can say, the only comfort I get in that, is because I was there and I know she didn't suffer and I know nobody else was involved and there was no foul play, if you like. There was no drugs or anything. So I know that, you know, a lot of people, I suppose, would think, oh God, that's awful. You were there and it happened right in front of you. But that's a comfort to me. It wasn't always, but it is, because I know there was nothing else. Do you know?
And going back to that night then, can I ask you, I don't know how, like, in the moment, like, you know, you said that day that, you know, that's comforting now.
Yeah.
But, like, getting her down the stairs, you know, the staff working on her.
It definitely, I know they say that, like, in films and stuff, it's like slow motion. It's definitely like slow motion. But it was like me and my sister were really close. We used to work together and everything. We both still lived at home. And I just knew, I kind of was, you know, I was standing looking and I said, you know, there's no point. I just knew, by looking at her, I felt it. So it was really like, afterwards, I didn't realize there was things I forgot, you know, because, I mean, with shock maybe or whatever, I don't know. But after she passed away, when she had collapsed, I forgot that she had fallen on my shoulder and I forgot that I couldn't keep her weight. I mean, she was tiny anyway. She was like a size 6, but just that, you know, the dead weight. And then when I went to see her, when she was in the coffin, she had a bruise on her head and I felt so guilty. I felt so bad because I was thinking, God, that's my fault. But I'd forgotten that. It took a long time to kind of...
Do you know what, as well? It could have been like, that's your little mark is on her forever.
It could be.
You know?
But things like that. And the night itself was, if I like forgot about, I came back through dreams and every other way, like, because I think you block it out consciously and then your subconscious just keeps reminding you. So that did take a long time.
So in that moment when you're in the room, obviously you're dealing with your boy, are you going straight away to your sister, to her boyfriend? Is everyone in the room just...
Everybody was just, I think, really shocked and just looking. And they take, well, I don't know whether you would know, that they take out like your jewellery and things like that. I know it's where's earrings, you know, it's really silly things, but they take out, you know, your earrings and then, you know, you could see your bare feet. And that's all. And then at some point there was a guard that just asked me, was that Lisa? And I said, yeah, I'm her sister. And I think because it happened in a public place, there needs to be some sort of record. I don't know, but it's like people just kept turning up. My uncle turned up. My sister's sister-in-law was there. And I don't know how anybody got in touch with anybody else. I wasn't aware. But yeah, because we needed to get a lift home from the hospital because the taxi had brought us. So, yeah.
And then after that, then, does it bring the family closer? Does it bring your dad closer or?
It definitely brought, so me and my sister Emma, like now we're super mega close. You know, we've grown up kind of to be more similar to each other than we were then. I definitely think it does bring the family closer because you spend just so much time together and you're a lot more vulnerable. You're a lot more raw with your family then than you would have. You never had need to tell them, I'm devastated. You never were before. You've never been brokenhearted and you're all brokenhearted together. So that creates something in itself, a strength in a family. Hopefully everybody else has that experience because I know for some families it can tear them apart, but thank God for my family it didn't. And then you're trying to look after your mom as well because I know she was my sister and, you know, that's devastating, but that's my mom's child. It's her oldest child, her first child. So you're kind of all pulling together for each other and definitely for my mom as well. And then Lisa had a little girl. She lived with us as well. So
how old was she?
She was 5 then.
Oh God.
Yeah. And she's again, like she's a wagon now, like, but, she was staying with us. She was Lisa was living there with her, like, so she was staying with us. And that had to be kind of, she had to be looked after as well. And practical things, you know, we'd bring her to school and she couldn't stay home forever.
But before that, talk to me, take me back a little bit. Just who goes home and tells Chloe? And
well, my mom told her and Lisa and Chloe had shared a bedroom. They had 2 separate beds. And my mom told her and she ran up to her. She said, no, no, no. And like hopped onto her mom's bed and was just crying. You know, she doesn't really remember a lot of it, which is a blessing. Because, you know, who needs that as their childhood? So she doesn't remember a whole lot of it. And actually, you know, it's Chloe gave obviously my mom a lot of strength in it because that was my mom's job. And then 3 weeks after Lisa passed away, Chloe's dad went for custody. And that was just, again, for my parents, like especially for my mom, it was awful because they'd no time to grieve. They were sucked straight into a court case. And that was then another thing that took off and kind of got legs that went on for till Chloe was 12.
How do you even deal with that?
I think my mom wasn't altogether shocked, but definitely shocked at how quickly it happened. And you know, we never got on with her dad, and she wasn't with them when she found out she was pregnant either. They got back together afterwards to try and make a go of it, but it really didn't work. So it was so difficult. And there's all the, as I say, the practical things. There's, you know, you have to close bank accounts and you have to get the grave ready and you have to pay for this and that. And then there's the court case and then there's the child. So it was just everything just whipped up real quick. And didn't settle for a really long time. But I never, it was kind of like we were nearly afraid to ask at the time how my mom was and how we just kept going. It was just one foot in front of the other and just keep going. And, you know, time goes by that way, but it wasn't as if we could kind of, I mean, obviously we called him every name on the sun and, you know, couldn't understand why now and why not have a conversation with us about it and whatever else. And we didn't think it was the right thing for Chloe either because she had always lived with my mom and us. And we were saying, you know, she's just lost her mom. Why would you want to take her from her home? But look, that's the way he wanted it. And maybe he thought it was the best for her. But ultimately, after years and years of courts and appeals and courts, when she was 12, she went to live with him. But we kept up, like, I have a really good relationship with her. Like I say, she's a wagon. But you know, we're close now, but I'm really glad she doesn't remember all that because I wouldn't like that to be anyone's memories of growing up or, you know, tension or the hurt, because that's the worst time in my life and my mom's and all my family's life. And I would hate for that to be her first impression of life. I'm glad she doesn't remember it.
And how old were you when this was happening, did you say to me?
I was 20. So Lisa passed away in the January and then I turned 21 in the September.
So young. And then your mom is only young though as well, isn't she?
Yeah, my mom is, she was 29 having me, so she's 66. So she was 49 maybe at the time. So she was really young. And I know you never think your mom is young.
Mm.
But she was it. She was.
And to have all of that, like she has to look after you, look after Chloe, and then all of a sudden Chloe is being, like her daughter's ripped away from her, and then she's, you know, the prospect of Chloe being ripped away from her.
Yeah.
And then all that then, through all that then, is your dad on the scene?
Yeah, he was really good at the time. And like I say, he was a good support. I mean, my brother and sister, I didn't go back to work because I worked with Lisa and I just couldn't, because everyone knew we were sisters. We were working as dental nurses. And I couldn't face it. And at the time there was no, like everything was handwritten. So I said, I can't see her handwriting everywhere. I just wasn't able. So I didn't go back to work for a while. I got a different job then. But everything has to go back to normal at some stage. So my dad was really good for when things did start to settle. He did visit a lot. And then when the court case came in, as luck or whatever would have it, Chloe's dad named my dad as a co-respondent, which he didn't have to. Which means that he was entitled to be there for everything, because family court is in Cameron. So it's only the two people named. So it would only be who's brought the court case and who they brought it to, but he brought it to the two of them.
Okay.
So that means that he had to be there, and that's the way that played out. So she had support there. But it went on and it was constant.
Can you explain the process for anyone who doesn't know or is probably about to go through it for one way or another?
Well, he went to his solicitor and filed a motion to gain full custody. They had been in court and they had joint custody and joint guardianship, and he wanted everything then. So they had to go to court.
So does a letter land on your mom's door, or does he knock on the door?
Yeah, just a letter came.
Wow.
But we knew it was a solicitor's letter, because you had to sign first.
Right.
So like I say, it was a lot quicker than expected, but we knew what it was when it came. And then we had to go and find a solicitor and tell them this is what's after happening. And then they start building up the case and they look at the circumstances. And it really, a lot of the time, it depends on the judge. The first judge they came across, her name was Judge Lenan, and I think she's in the circuit court now, but she was raging with him. She said, you know, how could you bring these people before me? And they've just buried their child. Now, by the time they actually went to court, I think the first appearance was in the first couple of months, so maybe 2 or 3 months down the line. Which is still really raw. And then she said, I don't want to hear anything from anybody for 2 months, let's say. So she'll put it on the back burner. And in the meantime, the solicitors are gathering this and that and the other. And I actually can't remember how many court appearances there was. But went into the tens of thousands in bills and went on till she was 12. And ultimately, she decided then she wanted to live with her dad.
And are you sitting Chloe down at 5, 6, 7, 8 and explaining that this is what's happening, or?
No, because, you know, we felt that she had been through enough. Now, she got a sense of it because, you know, it was real. They were so, on the other side, our perspective was that they were so tactile. They were so, like, everything was tactics. She thought it was wonderful and they spoiled her over there. Whereas when she went there on a Saturday night, and she had to do the Monday to Friday, the schoolwork with us. So, you know, you're up against a losing battle there anyway. And as I say, he is her dad. So we just didn't feel it would be in her interest, because him and his wife both worked full time. And we were like, who's even going to look after her? She's going to have to change school. You know, we were thinking the bigger picture, but we never said anything to her. And then as she was older, she started to become more aware. By the time she was in secondary, she knew what was happening. And she knows now a bit about what went on. But like I say, she doesn't remember an awful lot of it.
And then at what point then does things start to go wrong with your dad?
Well, I don't know now. If they divorced like 4 years, I must have been about 7 years ago. Actually, 7, 8 years ago. That's when things were kind of, I suppose, really, you know, he my dad was never great. And then he was really good at a time, and then he went back to being not great again. It wasn't that he was ever, you know, so sturdy or reliable or anything like that. But it did start to kind of fall apart. But it finished, like I say, 7, 8 years ago. And the last time I saw him, was in divorce court, in divorce court, and they went back into the judge. The judge makes a decision what way she's going to divide things up. And I said, I'll go to the bathroom. And I walked out the bathroom and literally my shoulder touched his. And I thought, oh, fuck. But I didn't say anything and neither did he. You know, he never said anything. And I just, heart was broke all over again. Like, he could have said something. I was on my own.
So does that devastate you?
Yeah, it did. And that was really it for me. Because I was like, he could have said, and I would be always open. I'm always open. Or would have been anyway. Because we never had a fallout as such. It just dwindled when he started looking for the house. He just stopped coming around. But there was never any word said or anything. But at that point, that's when I really said, no, this is, and he doesn't care. You know, that's what I thought. I just thought, if that was my child, I couldn't walk past my child. You know, so that's how it went.
So as a daughter, that's what you're experiencing. But as a woman, going forward with your life, what does that do to you?
I'd like to say, I'm terrible at relationships. I'm really bad at them. I go for all. I couldn't even tell you. I mean, the girls would laugh if I told you some of the stories. But I'm just not good at them. And I'm not a good judge of character with men. And I avoid them. Because if I'm not good at them, why keep putting myself through it? You know what I mean? And obviously I have kids now. So, but I'm quite content. It's not something I think about ever. You know, if I met somebody tomorrow, I probably wouldn't be bothered. But I think that's because I know how bad I am at them. You know, you can be really settled, and I was really settled. I was engaged before to my son's dad.
So tell me about the children. Talk to me about the children.
Oh, well, Isabel is 15, and I met her dad shortly after Lisa passed away, and I was pregnant really soon. And at the time, even at the time, I was really glad, because it just took me out of that. It took me out of the sadness in my house all the time. So she came along, and I just absolutely adored her, and she's beautiful, and she still is. But I got postnatal depression, and I struggled then from kind of that point with depression in general and anxiety. And it's the type of thing, depression, that you don't really see it until you're quite sick. And I remember my sister coming down. I was living in Meath at the time with her dad, and my sister saying, "You're not well." And I sent her off with flea in her ears. Said, "Don't come into my house and tell me, blah, 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 I'm not well." But I really wasn't.
In what way?
I was very depressed, and I felt with Isabel that, like, I didn't deserve to have her. And that feeling just kept growing. I just didn't deserve to have her, and I didn't want anyone else to have her either. I wouldn't leave her with anybody. And I was real possessive with her, but I still didn't think anything was enough.
Why do you think you were like that?
I don't know. It just affects you in different ways. I had postnatal depression on Luca then as well, when I had him, and it was totally the opposite. I'd look at him and I'd look at his dad, and his dad doted on him terrible. You know, he looked at him really with love in his eyes, and I was thinking, what's he looking at? You know, I didn't get it. And I was overwhelmed with that feeling with Isabel. And then the next time around, it was completely the opposite. So
when did the relationship with Isabel's dad break down?
We were never right for each other. You know, I felt pregnant really quickly, and we were never right. I'll never, be sorry or anything like that. But I think it was before she was even two. It wasn't right. I knew it wasn't.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Right. Like I say, we weren't on the same page. And he said something to me when I was pregnant. He said, I'm worried when you have the baby, you're going to go back out with your friends when you get your figure back. And from then, I just thought, this isn't for me. This isn't something I would ever think. And it's not something I think is right. It was a red flag. So from then, I just was really weary. And it never settled. We were never kind of content together. So that broke up when she was two, just before she was two. For good. We were on and off. But before she was two, I was only 24.
And you were living in Meath with him?
Yeah. Well, only in Stamullen now, not the back arse of nowhere. Mm. And my friend Kira was after moving into Balbriggan with her family, her son and her partner. And I thought it was great having a pal, but I couldn't go to her house in peace. And he'd be ringing and texting. And who's there? And who's there? And then the next day, who did you say was there? And, really a problem for, it was a problem for me. And I really thought he couldn't help it, because he'd say, I can't help worrying. You know, his friends were there, some other fellow was there. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? We'd be together, me and her, skull and wine, you know, that'd be that. But.
Was he older than you?
Yeah. I've never been with anyone my own age.
Really?
He's 8 years older than me. And Luca's dad is 10 years older than me.
Why do you think that is?
It'd be cliche to say daddy issues, but that's probably what it is. You know, it probably is that simple.
So do you think then with Lisa's, so Lisa's that then you find the security in an older man, get pregnant, then the possessiveness starts and you realise, shit.
Yeah, I just realised this isn't going to be a long term thing. I knew it. But at the same time, you're kind of thinking, but I have a baby, you know, and I don't want to be on my own. And then my family's going through enough. I don't want to go back home with a baby, you know, so.
Did you think that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they never said it ever. My family wouldn't be a bit like that. But I felt it, you know, and I thought I want to do it on my own, you know, but it was my mom that said it to me. She's like, you're not happy, just come home. And I was, no, the house is lovely and this and that. And she's, you know, in hindsight, I was very young as well. Like I was 22. What did I know? But no. And then in the end, you know, she was glad to have me back home, because at least she knew then I was well.
So you're suffering from your depression. You're in a possessive relationship, which is fair to say. But you get out of it. So what would you say to anyone in that moment that's right now probably listening to this in that situation?
Listen to your gut, for sure. You know when you know, and it's no good saying, well, maybe. And the fact is, you know, people care and people are kind, and it's not all about judgment. We really fear being judged. I'm going to be judged now. I have a baby by myself. And then when it happened with Luca, I had two kids by two dads and I'm still by myself. Oh, Jesus Christ. But that's just not how, that's how you feel about yourself. That's not how people feel. But definitely listen to your gut and generally reach out to your friend. Like my friends knew, my friend Kieran knew, because as I say, at Isabel's christening, my dad turned up with a little one. Me and Isabel's dad had a major row and I was in tears in the bathroom. And she just knew. She was like, this isn't good. This isn't the way it is. You know, this is not the way relationships are supposed to be. So if you have a feeling, chances are someone close to you also has a feeling that it's not right.
Why do you think, and I think of this, why do we fear the judgment?
It's, well, I know with me, it's like constant.
Is it?
Well, in certain aspects, like Leanne would probably tell you, our mutual friend, she's like, you're at a dangerous level of not giving a fuck what people think. And that's true to a point, you know, when it comes to my kids and stuff, because they're so important and I don't want to let them down. And I don't want what people think of me to reflect on them. That's all it is. I mean, I really don't care. And on a night out, I'm your worst nightmare because I'm a disaster. For the most part, I don't care. But the judgment thing, I think, is just always there. For me, anyway, it's just always, I don't want it to reflect onto my kids. It's whatever about me, I don't care. I just don't want it to affect them.
And then how old was Isabel when you left?
She was 2 when I went back home. And then shortly after that, I met Lucas' dad. And we got on really well. You know, we had a good relationship and we were together. I think we were together about 3 years when Luca was born. And then we were together about 6.5 years. So when Luca was just gone 3 when we split up. And yeah, there was nothing remarkable. I think that was probably one of the most steadiest times since my sister passed away that I had was then. Things were kind of quiet then.
And what made you split up with him?
He met someone else. Then things weren't quiet anymore. So that was just before I turned 30. And I remember my 30th was the most depressing party in the world. I felt awful. I was so low. And, you know, the girls were trying to make a big fuss. And, oh, you know, they turned around. I said, geez, I'm 30. I'm on my own. I have 2 kids with 2 dads. He was joking, you know. I thought it was awful. Now, obviously, now in hindsight, I don't think I'd feel that way if I was to live my life again. It's just then it felt like another failure. It felt like something else gone wrong.
And can I ask you about the relationship? Can we talk about that breaking down and how you pull yourself out of that? Because I think a lot of women are going through that. So what happened how did you find out?
Well, it was kind of, we weren't getting on, but it wasn't anything I thought was unnatural or abnormal. I just thought we're together a while and we're living together. We're just not getting on. But then I noticed he did start acting a bit odd, you know, kind of he would walk out of a room when I walked in and, you know, he'd go up to bed really early and I'd be thinking that, and I'd go up to bed really early and he'd get back up. You know, this type of behaviour. And I was thinking, off. But I said it to my mum, as you do. And she said, Alison, would he meet anybody else? And I said, no, you know. Like I said, where would he meet them? Because we drank in the same pub. He worked, blah, blah. We had the same circle of friends. No. So anyway, I came to a head one Friday. And he used to work from like 6 a.m. to maybe 4. So he came home from work, went straight up to bed for a nap. So I put Luca to bed 7:30, whatever. And, you know, kind of was getting ready for the evening, settling down. And he gets up into the shower and he's getting dressed to go to the pub. And he hadn't spent any time with Luke at all when he came in from work that particular day. And I just said, I have had it with this. I don't know what's going on. I want you out. Like, if you're not going to tell me, if we're not going to talk about it, you know, it's one thing, you know, kind of ignoring me. I said, but I'm not having you in bed. And then, but not tired, too tired to go to the pub. So that was it. That was that weekend. And that was a Friday. And then the following Wednesday, as it would happen, his phone bill came. And I said, I didn't even want to, but I just knew I had to. I opened it and it was itemized at the time. And the second, my number was the most texted and called. And the second was this other number. And I said, geez, I can't. So I gave it to my sister and she rang and girl answered the phone and she told her. And the girl seemingly said, oh, he said he had a child, but they've split up. And Emma said, well, they have now, but they hadn't. But, you know, that girl, I don't know what he told her. And even if she did know that he was in a relationship, it's not her that broke my heart, it's him. So.
And did he break your heart?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really, really was devastated. And I remember waking up crying before I'd even had a thought. I was upset. And I rang my mom and I said, when is this going to end? You know, when am I going to just not care? You think you'll never get there. It's horrible because you think you'll never get there. And then it really hurts when you know they're out and they're like over it. And then you're like, did it mean anything to that? You know, is it just me? But eventually you do. Eventually you wake up and it's not the first thing on your mind. It might be the second, but it's not the first. And then a couple of days, it's the fourth. And then a couple of days. It definitely takes time, but it definitely does happen when you kind of least expect it. Now I did. You know, my friends were really good. They all rallied round and, you know, I had nights out and my family were really good. But it's just, that doesn't heal you. That just distracts you. It's the time that'll do that for you. And eventually everybody gets there.
And is it a kick to the teeth? Like, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's actually like a physical kick in the stomach. I remember, I can still feel it now when I think about it, especially when I opened the bill and I saw the number and I just thought, bollocks.
And that was the Tuesday, you said, was it?
That was the Wednesday after.
You kicked him out?
Yeah.
And where did he go?
I think he went to his mum's. Now, his mum's lovely. His mum's really lovely. And she was the first person I rang. I said, you're never going to believe this plan. She was so sorry, Sha. So, so sorry.
And did you have it out with him?
He never admitted to it. I did bring it up with him. And I said, I know about what's her name. And he was like, we're not together anymore. That has nothing. And I was like, the fuck? You know, I was hysterical. I said, I'm holding the bill for the last month and her number is on it. And you were living here. So how are you going to tell me it's not? But he just hung up the phone on me. He just wouldn't face it.
I have a friend and her partner left her for another woman. But she never asked him to stay when he said he was gone.
Mm.
She just let him go and she never asked him to stay. And I wonder whether she regrets that, you know, asking him to stay. Like, you know what I mean?
I think it's a different, like, physically if they go or not. But emotionally, they're already gone if they've met somebody else. Because, like, I hadn't. Your friend obviously hadn't. So if you had said, you know, stay, maybe we're working it or whatever. I know I know what I'm like. I would have had a few glasses of wine and punched the head off him every time I thought about it. So I wasn't putting myself through that either. Or him, you know, it just wouldn't, it's no way to spend your life either. So as much as I say, well, I wouldn't take him back and this and that. I totally get why people do, but just for me, I couldn't. Because I would just always be bringing it up. And that's the two of us be miserable.
I wonder if it's easier that they do go.
It's horrible in the beginning because they're gone. They're out. And like, you know, I have a friend going through, well, it's a while ago now, but she went through a breakup and she said, every time I pass them by or see them, she goes, I just think, fuck the two of you, because he moved on so quick. And she's like, how? How did they do that? So it's horrible because they're coming to the door to collect Luca, in my case, in new clothes and everything else. And you're thinking, are you, like, you know, you wouldn't have had a wash in about 6 weeks because you're feeling so sorry for yourself. And you're like, are you for real? You know, it's like, I remember cleaning the kids' room and picking up Isabel's little pants and being so upset. I was blowing my nose with them and I just couldn't pull myself back. And now it, like I said, time is a great healer and it does. Now I can nearly kind of laugh about it, but it's very hard. It's very tough and it takes time and you're allowed to feel shit about it. You're grieving the loss of something. And for me, I felt really resentful of him. I was like, we were going to raise our children together. We had plans and you've changed their life as we had planned it. You know, nobody got a say. You just went out and did that for yourself. So, yeah, fuck you.
I wonder if it's just men who go off. Like, I don't know. Like, every relationship I've been in, I think I let them break up with me, like, because I didn't want to break up with them. Like, you know, I think, I don't know. Do you think it's just men that just move on so quickly?
I think it definitely feels that way. It definitely feels that way. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm biased because I'm a woman, but I look at couples and it's like stunning girls, but not so stunning guys. And I'm thinking, where's the equality in that? You know, it's not. I think men always have a different, they always have nearly somewhere else to be, whereas women don't think like that. men always think on a fallback, and if this happens and this and whatever. I don't think women think like that. It's FOMO.
I think so.
Or is it, you know, you've 1 foot in and 1 foot out? It's like you're always on the lookout. Are you always going to be kind of unsettled? You know, because it's great to be content and be happy. Well, what happens when you're content and happy and he's going to the pub 3 times a week? Is that what that means? It's a real fine line, because you don't want to be the nagging wife. Nobody wants to be that. But then obviously, what are they looking for? I remember my auntie said to me one time, there is nothing out there at 4 o'clock in the morning for a married man but trouble. And it always stuck with me. And she said, fine, have the few pints. Like I, like myself, I love me a few pints. Chipper and home. She said, when it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, she said, that is bad news. I mean, sure, it goes for women as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Definitely, I think it goes for men.
More so. No, I know from Ian, we have a few men followers and men listeners. So it's probably cursing us right now.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah, immediately. But it is, it's just a wonder that I always have when I do see or hear stories that men have gone off. Like, I never hear a story of a woman going off, or yeah, like a woman, a split up and a woman going on so quickly.
Yeah.
Actually, I have heard one. Yeah, probably have heard one.
I think the ratio is definitely in the men's favour though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you do acknowledge women do it, not at the rate that men do it. And another thing, men don't, I find, they won't be by themselves. Women are quite happy. Like, you know, if you get to 70, 80 and you, you know, Jennings funeral home's calling, if the man goes first, the woman seems to be fine having her own life. And then the woman goes first, the man is dating your one that he met at bingo.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, they just don't seem to be okay being by themselves.
Isn't it, do you know the saying, happy release? Do you know what happy release is?
No.
My husband didn't know what a happy release was either.
Does he now?
Well, yeah. But yeah, no, it's not. So a happy release is when somebody, mainly when a man dies. And my mother would say, "Ah, sure, that's a happy release for her."
Mm.
Because he's gone and now she can live her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's terrible, because I said to Paul, I don't think I was having a row with him last year, and I said, you know what, when you go, it'll be a happy release for me.
Why did we turn into our mask?
Like, what is that about? Like, and I said to and Paul was like, a happy release? And he thought it was something like, you know, he was going to have a good night or something, you know?
But I didn't know where you were going.
A lot of people, but it's a happy release. And I said to his mum, do you know what happy, and she said, yeah, of course I do. It's when, it's in the olden, maybe in the olden times of like your mum and your nannies, like, you know, if anything happens to the man and they say, well, that was a happy release because he was a pig or he was a bastard.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. So maybe you got a happy release in terms of him going and leaving you off. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely have had some good times since, for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't imagine it being any other way than it is. You know, everyone will tell you that, you know, you can't imagine it being any other way than it is now.
And then, is he still with her?
No.
Okay.
No, he's in another relationship now.
And do you get the feeling that, like, when you're seeing him off with the girl or whoever it was, that you're like, look at him, as you said, with their new clothes and...
Yeah.
And you're like, but he wouldn't... bring me to the cinema.
Yeah, there definitely is similarities in everyone's story, you know. I don't know whether I don't know, we always went to the same pub and the same this and the same that, and I'd never worry he'd be overly good with anybody else. But yeah, there is all that nearly jealousy, like, there they are, they're going away, they're going off again, they're, you know, I think that's natural to feel. And then, you know, the time will always come that you'll get your own back, or you'll move on and you'll just be like, I really don't care.
And where did he meet her? Did you find out where you met her?
No, he had started, see, now you don't have to go anywhere because you only have your phone.
Mm.
So he started going to town a couple of times to a particular bar, and I'd say he met her in there, but I'd say he arranged to meet her in there.
Right.
I wouldn't say, I'd say it was like set up, because all the texts and stuff, I thought they've met somewhere, you know, online and exchanged numbers. Yeah, and like I say, now you don't have to go anywhere to meet anybody. You can just pick up the phone. So that was kind of the beginning of all that.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's only scary for certain people. It's only scary if you're the type to do it. You know, it's not scary for people that don't want to see what's out there. But like you say, like looking in the club, when you're in a club, that's exactly what it's like.
And then obviously Luca was young, but how do you explain that to Isabel?
Isabel was, I think she was 7. And it's funny, like now she doesn't have any time for Luca's dad at all. I just said that we kept fighting and that we decided not to be together anymore. Thankfully, because I stayed in the house, not too much changed for them. I mean, if I had to leave and everything, it would have been different. And it's much more difficult for anybody who has to leave somebody and actually physically take the kids and everything. That's harder. But not too much changed. I mean, you know, I used to take them to school, do the dinners, everything else, and none of that changed. So she didn't really bat an eyelid. She didn't mind. So, which it was just the three of us then. It's still just the three of us now with my mum.
Luca and Isabel, do they still have their fathers in their life?
Yeah, they both go every weekend and I'm on really good terms with them. Yeah, it's all worked out the way it was supposed to, I suppose. I'm really lucky with them. It's not obviously for some people ideal, but you know, I wouldn't change it. They're really good dads and the kids love them.
What was it like in the first time letting them go?
Well, Isabel went first and I used to work. I used to, in a different life, be a hairdresser. And so he would take her while I was in work. And then I'd be too tired when I came home. Like Saturday and hairdressers can be mental. So I didn't really mind. Yeah, I just got used to it.
And with Luca, was it different because he'd left?
No, it was different because I was alone when he went, because Isabel would be gone with her dad and then Luca would go his and then I was on my own in the house. So I used to just go out walking and stuff because I didn't like the emptiness of the house with no kids. It's so unnatural when you have them than to just not have them. So
how do you deal with that?
I went out walking and then I don't know, like it kind of took a long time to get into the routine and I had to stick with it. My mum was saying, start as you mean to go on. You know, so that's how it came to be. But I remember, you know, when we weren't split up that long and Luca was vomiting during the night and my third or fourth time being woken up by him crying, I was coarse instead. I said, look, I bet you he's asleep in his bed and I have to strip the bed and wash it again. And, you know, not that you resent it, but that, I think, hardens you a bit to it. And you're like, no, you can take them now for the night. I'm knackered. You know, I'm knackered having them. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's really healthy. And like my mom always said, you know, when boys come to 15, 16, they're going to be having pints with their dad regardless. You know, boys love their dad. So with that in mind, you know, I wouldn't run the dads down or anything like that at all. And I don't have any need to. They're really good to them. They're good to me when I need it to. Leanne's always slagging me about Luca's dad because he's gone through this long blonde hair phase and yeah, it mortified, like even football and stuff. I'm like, do not stand beside me. But yeah, so she was, when I wasn't well, she was in the hospital with him as well. And she was like, he's really emotional. I said, you know, he's crying because he thinks that I'm never going to get out here and he's going to be left with the kid. That's the end of his life. But no, it's all worked out really well.
And tell me what you were in hospital for.
I woke up one day and I double vision and I thought, well, that's really weird, but I didn't feel bad. And it was a Thursday and I had arranged to meet my aunt for a coffee. My aunt is 80, but try and see them as much as I can. And I'd arranged to meet her for a coffee, but I had the double vision. So by the time the kids got to school and everything else, my mom was up and I said, I'm not going to be able to drive. Can you drive and come with me? And she said, yeah. So by the time we started driving, I started developing a headache. And I said, go to the chemist. I'm going to tell them I'm getting a migraine because I know migraines, sometimes it affects your vision. Got the tablets, made no difference. Went out to the pavilion and I was still adamant. No, I'm fine. I'm grand. Mum was saying, you look a little bit pale, you know. I said, I'm fine. So I went up. Anyway, she sat down and so did my aunt. And they said they'd have two coffees. And I went up and I said, two coffees. And when the girl put them on the counter, I looked down. I said, are they all for me? I only wanted two. And she said, there is only two. And I said, oh, God, sorry, like, it's just a joke. But picked up the coffees, went back, and my mum said, Alison. And I was like, what? And she said, your eye. My eye had completely turned in, my right eye. But I was still just seeing double, so I didn't notice any difference. So I went home. Mum said, you're going to have to go to the hospital. And I said, not at all. I'll go, you know, I'll sleep in a dark room and blah, blah, blah. So eventually nothing worked and the headache started getting kind of bad. So I went to the doctor. That's the furthest I'd go. And she said, straight to Ballmount. I don't know what's going on. So went to Ballmount and had a lumbar puncture, and they're really good in Ballmount, like once you get there. And yeah, I got admitted then on the Thursday night, and the Friday then I woke up and I woke up first and I couldn't balance. I couldn't really walk and my left side was kind of tingling. And I was on the neuro ward and I said, I'm after having a stroke. I said, I think I'm after having a stroke. And because everybody else in the ward had had a stroke, I couldn't, at that point, my head was so sore. I actually couldn't lift my head off the pillow. So I was just lying there and they didn't know what happened. And they were sending me for all, you know, echoes and ECGs and MRIs and CAT scans and everything. And they said, no, nothing is showing up and we'll do another lumbar puncture. And so I said, geez, another one, because I got kind of sore. Anyway, that was that. Saturday in Beaumont, everybody goes home. So I woke up on Saturday and I couldn't get my words out. I couldn't speak. And my family were going mad now at this point. They said, something is really wrong. There has to be something shown. And my sister-in-law and everything, she kept ringing the ward. She said she needs another CAT scan, another MRI. Something's wrong. They said she's not having a stroke. So that was the Saturday. And on the Monday, the head neurosurgeon came down. And because it was something they couldn't put their finger on, I got great attention that way because it was really rare. But they treated me, they diagnosed me with this thing called Miller-Fisher syndrome. I had had tonsillitis the week before. And Miller-Fisher syndrome is like when you have a virus and instead of attacking the virus, your body attacks your body. So it turned out my body started to attack my brain, the bottom of my brain, and it was severing the nerves. And that's why I couldn't feel the left-hand side and I couldn't see. And that's why the speech wasn't coming or anything. So they said the treatment for that is 5 days IGIV. So it's red blood cells and it takes about 3 hours every day. It's like kind of dialysis. They said one of the risks with that is that you'll have a stroke with it, but it was getting progressively worse. So I said, yeah, okay, I haven't got a choice. So that was Monday. And then by the Friday, my speech was getting back to a little bit. And, you know, I got a little bit better. And they were great in Beaumont. They really were. But the following Friday then, so 2 weeks and a day, I discharged myself, came home. Now, at that point, I still had a turn in my eye. I still had double vision. And they said that wasn't guaranteed to ever.
Why did you discharge yourself?
Because I'd finished all my, I really miss my kids is the answer to that, I suppose. But I'd finished all my, you know, the IGIV was done. They didn't feel there was any benefit to doing another one. So what I was left with was nerve damage. And they said nerves sometimes repair themselves and sometimes don't. And there's no way of telling. So I was just happy to be walking and talking at that point. Now, I couldn't walk by myself. I had to link somebody. And my eye was still turned in. So I had to wear this like patch kind of thing on my glasses. So I was attractive. And I obviously wasn't driving or anything then. Mm. So I went home and they said, they wanted me to stay in another week at least. I said, oh, I'm here 2 weeks. I was really losing my mind. I said, I can't. I'm too depressed to stay here. I'm going home. So I still had to see a million appointments when I left. But thank God it did all come back eventually. It did take a really long time. That was in April. And I didn't start driving again then until August. So it took a long time to come back. But I was lucky it came back at all because none of that was ever guaranteed. But it seemingly you'd actually have more of a chance of winning the lotto than catching this thing. So I wasn't sorry to see the back of Beaumont.
And will it come back?
Because you've had it once, because it's so rare that you've had it at all, there is a chance that it will come back again. So I'm always really conscious if I get, especially now with COVID and everything, like if I get an infection, what way my body's going to react to that infection? I'm a little bit self-conscious of that. But hopefully not. I don't think so. Not unless I get a really bad infection. And again, it's the same thing.
And then we said, you said earlier on then about failures. Do you think that, like, at what point do you realise that you haven't failed?
I think, you know, it's really hard. Like, it is hard to accept sometimes that sometimes you do fail and that's fine, you know, but I think the more you look into different relationships, and I love people and I love different types of lives, and I see the lives people have and the choices and the decisions, and I'd never judge them for that. So I don't know why I turn it back on myself. So definitely my friends and my family would have always been really supportive, but it's until really I found other people in my situation and then other people that have been through different situations and how they coped with it. And just thought, you know what, you do the best with what you have at the time. And you cannot look back and keep thinking, why did I do that? And cannot do that. The past is gone. Leave it there. You know, nothing changes if nothing changes. So if you see it and you'll do it a different way the next time, that's good enough. Just keep moving forward is how I think of it.
How long did it take you to get there?
Well, I'm 37 now. So definitely 37. I mean, you know, I definitely try and be kind of positive and not dwell on the negative. It's great to acknowledge it, but you cannot, you know, because I always think my sister would give anything to be where I am today, anything to be here, regardless of how bad a day I'm having. And it's not I don't have the right to be given out about a life that other people would want. And then like that again, I say, I've been through the worst. I'm not going to go there again. It has to get better. So I kind of think of it that way. Even in work and stuff, I always think if I have a crappy day, well, tomorrow can't be any worse. You know, so just try and keep going. But definitely your friends. And Leanne is a big support, huge support, because she's ridiculously positive, annoyingly so. But she doesn't let you get into yourself either. Doesn't let you feel sorry for yourself. So you need someone like that as well to be like, get a grip. But as I say, it's because of everything that's gone on. I always think, no, my sister would give anything to be here. I'm not going to have a bad day.
How's your mum?
My mum's never been the same. She's really well. You know, she's a real kind of entity, my mum. She doesn't particularly look after herself. Loves her cigarettes, loves her glass of wine. Like I say, never exercise, nothing. And she's never sick. There's never a bother on her. She's real kind of old school, just has a job to do, hasn't the time to be sick. And she's really, you know, a pillar of strength in our family. We all rely on my mum, me more so than any of them, I have to say. But she's well, she's really well, and she's good in herself.
Never been the same, you said. Tell me about that.
No, she's never been like, you know, like I say, it's because I have children now, and I just think, I don't know how I would get up and keep going. But it's like, she says it herself, it'll never be the same, for life is never the same because a part of her is gone. You know, it's like taking off one of your arms or legs. Your life is never going to be the same. So, you know, I think it is, it's really sad. It's obviously sad for everybody, but I think when a parent loses a child, it's just inevitable that they're going to be different and they're not going to have the same amount of joy or the same amount of anything they had before. As much as she's had grandchildren since then, she's had, you know, new grandchildren and lots of good experiences. It's just not the same. There's just something not there, you know, that's always going to be the case.
And someone said that, I think it could have been Natalie actually who said it, is that when people say time's a healer, time's not a healer.
No, time is not a healer. It's what you do with the time. So if you want, you know, like I say, it was different for me because when my sister passed away, I went on to have children and my life started nearly again. And you know what it's like having kids. It's a love you've never had before. But when something is taken from you that has that strength of love, my mom's life didn't start again. She had to carry on with that being taken from her. So there was no kind of second chance, but there was no second journey for her. It was just having to go on the same one just without something. So it's really tough for parents. It's a lot, I would imagine, a lot tougher for parents because, as I say, my nieces and nephews and my own children weren't here at that time, just Chloe was. So it's been loads for us. And I can imagine it's not the same for Mam, as I say.
And I asked Ian in his one about the suicide. Is the grief different because it was so quick?
I think, I don't know. I think it's the shock is different, but the grief, I think, like I said, it's nearly a comfort because there was no, I mean, I listened to Ian's story as well and I just thought, I don't know how I would feel. And I'm real empathetic with people like that. I always think, how would I feel? You know, they're very different. And the loss is the same and the missing them is the same. But no, I think because it was so instant, as a shock as it was, there's comfort to know there was no pain. There was nothing anybody could do. Nobody else was involved. That is a comfort.
And what about your sister and brother? How are they?
They're good. They're good. Yeah, my brother lives kind of close enough. He lives out in Swords. He's married with his own children. And my sister lives in Tipperary, so she's kind of far from me. But we're really close, you know, and she's so supportive, my sister, you know, and anything. She's real out there. She's a hippie. So nothing is, she's never shocked. Nothing, you know, if I said to her, I'm going to start living naked, she'd be like, well, good for you. That's the path you want. You know, she's not a bit judgy woody, you know, but they're well, like that. They're settled with their families and they're well.
Did your mom ever meet anybody?
My mom has never met anyone since my dad left all them years ago. She never wanted to. And I'm always saying to her, you know, we watch first dates with the glass of wine, me and her, and I always say we should go on that together, you know, because Leanne's always saying to me, you should go on that. And I said, can you imagine my face, you know? I have like facial Tourette's when it comes to things. And I said, I couldn't, but my mom was like, just wouldn't be bothered. You know, maybe if things had been different, like she hadn't the time and it wasn't a done thing. No mobiles or anything then. So it would have been an effort to go out to meet somebody. And she never went to the pubs or anything either. So she's had one love of her life.
And what about you?
I've had millions. I don't know. Like, I suppose I would never say never to anything. It's just not a priority. It's just not something, you know, I never think I would love that. I'd love to have what they have. It's just not a thought that ever comes to my head. Like, I'm quite content as I am. I mean, maybe it's a bit of a protective thing, but, you know, until the kids got older, I think, I have stuff to do. I have to get my own house. You know.
How hard is that?
You know, I kind of don't, try not to dwell on that, because when you're on your own, obviously, there's only so much. I'm not getting a mortgage today or tomorrow or the next day. But I'm getting all the time with my mum that a lot of people don't. So, you know, I'm not hugely. It's very tough sometimes. And like I say, we argue like a married couple that can't afford to leave. But for the most part, I do feel genuinely really lucky. You know, the kids are so happy there, and like they're there with my mum now, and I wouldn't have anything for before, because everybody else has their own life. But my mum and I are so together all the time. Like, we always go away together and everything. So I don't, you know, I don't feel I'm missing anything or anything. I don't know. It's just a relationship thing, maybe, but maybe not. And they're equally as fine.
Like, I have to say, Alison, I'm glad that Leanne set us up to sit down and talk. And I'm sure this has probably gone way better than any other setup that you've ever been put on.
She's always trying to pimp me out.
Is she? Yeah. I'd love to see you and your mum on first dates. It'd be hilarious. Do you know?
Oh, God,
I mean?
No, she's so, my mum is so different, like, to me. Now, she's outspoken and everything as well, you know, but she's like, holy Jesus, did you see that? Yeah.
And it's great to see that you are, like, you've had some tragedies in your life, and maybe that illness that you had, what was it called?
Miller Fisher's.
Maybe that was just everything manifesting that way.
I don't know what it was.
And then it's gone out of your body now.
I don't know what it was, but I remember even, like, I'm not small, and the guys, you know, they're coming up to bring you down for your appointments. And they were all, you know, slick hair. They're about 20 trying to push me in the wheelchair. I was like, I am not staying here. You're very young to be on that ward. You don't mind me saying, do you? So, no, I don't mind you saying. Just fucking push me.
Do you feel like you're lucky now?
Yeah, I feel like I'm extremely lucky with everything. Obviously, the kids are my two biggest accomplishments. But my family and my friends, they just mean everything to me. And I'm so lucky with them, because they're always there, and I could ring any of them whenever. Now, likewise, they could ring me, but definitely they've been like my kind of rock all the time when it happens. And it's always been like the same people, you know, that I would call on. So yeah, I really do feel lucky. Thanks.
And on that note, Alison, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Thanks, Rebecca. I really enjoyed it.
Good. Except for a little visitor that I'll probably explain on a story of some sort. But yeah, Alison, thanks again.
You're very welcome.
Hold up. Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.